Beyond the Tenth by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 4. The night was cold, bitterly cold. On the shrubs across the road, a thin layer of snow glistened and sparkled, giving a Christmas cake effect to little plants and small apple trees. Further across a small garden patch, a heavy diesel locomotive chugged and roared away as it waited for a distant signal to give the all clear, so that it could drag its long, long line of freight cars on to New York, carrying thousands of new automobiles from Detroit, across Canada, and again into the USA. Further up the hill, a horrendous clamor erupted upon the shuddering air as a recorded carillon of bells blasted from a modern church steeple with such volume that everything seemed to tremble and crouch in fright. From the nearby hotel came the sounds of late-night revelry as tipplers celebrated or bemoaned their luck that day at the local racetrack. Well-known bookies were smiling with joy, for that day there had been a killing. The talk came clearly. The clatter of bottles and glasses was sharp upon the night air, and the rattle and tinkle of the cash registers were a continual reminder that someone, at least, was enjoying prosperity. Across the long bridge spanning the railroad tracks, people returning from late duty in shops and factories sped homeward in gay abandon, oblivious of the risk of police speed traps. Further to the left, a neon sign blinked on and off with mindless robotic regularity. In the frosty air, the stars shone hard and clear. Not a wisp of cloud obscured the sky. Not a strand of smoke impeded the light from the now rising moon. The air was crisp, crisp, and almost tinkling with a layer of frost. The old man, sitting motionless in the cheap and shaky wheelchair, suddenly moved and pushed the window wide open. The chilly air was like a tonic, like a breath of new life after the heat of the day, and the old man was immune to the cold, but could not stand the heat. Sitting in the wheelchair in his pajamas, for the night was advanced, he wheeled his chair to a covered object beside the window. Taking off the cloth covering revealed a powerful telescope. Quickly pushing it in position, he prepared to focus on the little points of light such a limitable distance away. "Do you want to freeze us all to death?" mildly inquired a voice from the other room. "This is not cold," said the old man. "Tonight I think we shall be able to see the rings of Saturn very clearly. Do you want to come and take a look?" For a moment there was a rustling and a bustling, and then first a chink and then a growing amount of light as a door was opened in back of the old man's room. Mrs. Old Man came through and shut the door behind her. She, poor soul, was well wrapped up and even had a blanket over an overcoat around her shoulders. The old man bent over his telescope, staring to focus in the general direction of the planet Saturn. Suddenly his attention was distracted by something. Quickly moving the telescope, he refocused on something and tensed with rigid concentration. "What is it? What is it?" asked Mrs. Old Man. "Is it an airplane?" The old man sat silent, his fingers moving over the focusing of the telescope. "Quick, quick," he said. "Be ready to put your eye here as soon as I move. This is something you've wanted to see. Ready?" "Yes," said Mrs. Old Man, and got ready to look as soon as the old man himself had got his head out of the way. She peered through the telescope up into the night sky, following the path of a long bar like a dumbbell sliding across the sky, a dumbbell lit at both ends, and between the two lights a whole series of flickering, blinking, twinkling, ever-changing colors. She breathed hard. "I've never seen anything like this," she exclaimed. But then, as she looked, the object came close overhead, and with the telescope she was looking right up underneath. A thing like a door opened in the object, and from the door came a number of bright vehicles, glistening globes. They shot out of what was obviously a mother ship, and then extinguished their lights and disappeared in all directions. The mothership then extinguished her lights, hovered for a moment or two, and then shot heavenwards and was seen in dark silhouette, diminishing in size against the bright night sky. The noise continued from the hotel. No one had been disturbed. Cars continued to speed across the railroad bridge. The returning travelers were too intent upon their driving. In the cab of the great diesel locomotive, the engineer smoked his cigar and read his newspaper by the cab light, oblivious of the great ship, which was there for him and for anyone else to see. To the left, the mindless robotic neon sign changed from green to red again. The world went about its business, looking down at the works of man, ignoring the strange things that flew in the night skies as they had flown for centuries past and would fly for years to come until, in the end, the people from space decide to land on this Earth once again. They have been here before, you know. Earth is like a colony. Earth is a testing ground, a seeding place, where different types are put together so that the gardeners of space can see how they get on together. Don't believe all the rot about God being dead. God is very much alive, and God is using this Earth as a testing ground and letting little humans learn upon Earth for the much greater things that will happen in the life to come. The little town, perched sleepily on the side of the placid river, basked in the late afternoon sun. Shoppers slowly meandered along the street, window gazing first, and then, having a not too strenuous mental fight that they should decide what could be afforded and what could not. The stores and the supermarkets were not at all crowded, for this was a slack day in the shopping week, but people wandered about more as an excuse to be out in the sunshine. Down by the coal wharf, men were unenthusiastically dealing with the self-unloader of a coal ship moored alongside. There came the desultory and staccato noise of a bulldozer shoveling mounds of coal, ready to be loaded into an endless stream of trucks and taken to great factories nearby. Just off the parking lot, a mongrel dog of indefinable ancestry pawed lethargically among the refuse. A well-aimed potato caught him in the flank, and he rushed off howling, showing the only turn of speed seen in the little town that day. Down by the river's edge, some boys were paddling, without taking their shoes and socks off. They had an old wrecked boat with the timbers rotten and worm-eaten, and they were lazily engaged in play having to do with Morgan the Pirate. On the other side of the street, the man in the radio shop was just changing a record, giving a welcome relief from the blasting volume of sound which normally poured from that area. Someone, possibly a housewife, possibly a farmer from further inland, gazed without curiosity up into the sky, wondering no doubt if the weather would keep up so that the crops could be harvested. Gazed up and froze into shocked immobility. Passers-by looked at him for a moment and then smiled to themselves, then turned and looked up into the sky. They too became shocked. More and more people gazed up into the hot sky, gazing, gesticulating, pointing. A babble of sound arose. Cars screeched to a halt, and drivers and passengers poured out to look upwards. From the river's bank, the boys stopped their play and looked up. One tripped and fell backwards into the water, filling the old wrecked boat. Yelling with alarm, he leapt to his feet, and he and his companions raced for the market square with water squelching from their shoes, and with one boy dripping water from the seat of his pants. A man dashed into a house and was gone but a moment before returning with a pair of binoculars. Feverishly he put them to his eyes, and with trembling fingers focused. The babble of talk increased. Quickly the glasses were snatched from him and passed from one person to another as they all gazed up. High in the sky, beyond the height at which aircraft would fly, there hovered a large silver pear-shaped object, with the larger part pointing down and the smaller part pointing up. It hovered there, huge and in some alien way menacing. "That's not a balloon," said one man who had recently returned from the Air Force. "If it was a balloon, the larger part would be on the top instead of at the bottom." "Yes," exclaimed another, "and it would be drifting with the wind. Look at those high alto stratus clouds passing by it. And yet, it's stationary." The little town buzzed with consternation and speculation. High above, unmoving, inscrutable, hovered the enigmatic object, never varying in position, making no motion, no movement of any kind. Slowly the day came to a close, with the object there as though glued to a picture of the heavens itself, there, unmoving, unchanging. The moon came up and shone across the countryside, and above, in the moonlight, the object loitered. With the first early dawn, it was still there. People who were preparing to go to work looked out of their windows. The object was still there, as if a fixture, and then, suddenly, it moved. Faster and faster it went, straight up into space, and disappeared. Yes, you know, there are people in spaceships who are watching this world, watching to see what happens. "Well, why do they not come down and talk to us like sensible people would?" you may ask. But the only reply is that they are being sensible. Humans try to shoot them and try in any way to harm these UFOs. And if the UFOs, or rather the people within them, have the intelligence to cross space, then they have the intelligence to make apparatus which can listen to Earth radio and Earth television. And if they watch Earth television, Well, then, they will think they have come to some vast mental home, because what could be more insane than the television programs which are foisted on a suffering public? Television programs which glorify the unclean, which glorify the criminal, which teach sex in the wrong way, in the worst way possible, which teach people that only self-gain and sex matters. Would you dive into a fish tank that you could discuss things with some worms at the bottom of the tank? Or would you go to a colony of ants laboring in one of these glass tanks designed to show the work of ants? Would you go in there and talk with ants? Or with any of these lesser creatures? Would you go into some glass hothouse and talk to some experimental plants and ask them how they are doing, saying, "Take me to your leader"? No. You would watch, and if an ant bit you, you'd say, "Spiteful little things, aren't they?" And be careful that you didn't get bitten in the future. So the people of space, whose one-year-old children would know more than the wisest man on this earth, just watch over this colony. A few years ago, I lived in Montevideo, the capital of Uruguay, a country which, in South America, lies between Argentina and Brazil. Montevideo is upon the River Plata, and the ships of the world pass by, going to Rio de Janeiro or to Buenos Aires, or come into the port of Montevideo. From my 9th-floor apartment, I could look out across the river, right out to the South Atlantic, beyond the confines of the river. There were no obstacles, no obstructions to the view. Night after night, my family and I used to watch UFOs coming from the direction of the South Pole, straight over our apartment building, and coming lower so that they could alight in the Mato Grosso of Brazil. Night after night, with unvarying regularity, these UFOs came. They were seen not just by us, but by a multitude of people, and in Argentina they are officially recognized as unknown flying objects. The Argentine government are well aware that these things are not the product of hysteria or of a fevered imagination. They are aware that UFOs are of surpassing reality. The day we landed in Buenos Aires, a UFO came in and actually alighted at the main airport. It stayed for several minutes at the end of the runway and then took off at fantastic speed. I was about to say that all this can be read in the press reports, but that is no proof of the truth of it, because too often the press alter things to suit themselves or to get more readers, and I have no faith whatever in anything which is printed in the daily press. So instead I will say that this UFO landing is the subject of an Argentinian government report. Having seen these UFOs night after night, and seeing how they can change course and maneuver, I state emphatically that these were not satellites flashing across the sky. The times that satellites can be seen varies and is known to the minute. The times that we saw these other things were different, and in addition, we have also seen the satellites. The night sky of Montevideo is remarkably clear, and I had a very high-power telescope of the type used by the Swiss customs officials, which ranged from 40 magnification up to 350. This world is under observation, but we need not be upset by that. It is sad indeed that so many people always fear that those who observe wish to do harm. They do not. They wish to do good. Remember that there are ages and ages going back into history, and various civilizations and cultures have appeared and disappeared almost without trace. Remember the civilization of Lemuria and the great civilization of Minoa. Who has been able to explain the enigmatic statues of Easter Island? Yes, someone once tried and wrote a sort of book about it, but it's not necessarily accurate, you know. Or, if you want to go to another stage, how about the Maya people? Can anyone say what happened to the Mayan civilization? Each of these civilizations was a fresh culture placed upon the earth to liven up stock which had become dull and, what I can only term, denatured. There is also a very, very ancient theory or legend that countless years ago a spaceship came to this earth and something went wrong with the ship. It could not take off. So the people aboard, men, women, and children, were marooned here, and they started another form of civilization. It is extremely fortunate that the Hebrew books of the Old Testament had been translated into Greek long before Christians came upon the scene, because the early Christians, just like the present-day ones, tried to alter things to their own gain. We can, then, find out a lot about ancient history from the Hebrew books which have not been tampered with by Christianity. But even they leave us uninformed about the Mayans, the Easter Islands, and the Etruscans. These were civilizations which flourished more than 3,000 years B.C. We can know that because Egyptian hieroglyphs can be traced back to the year 3000 BC, and some of these, traced upon temple walls and in tombs, give information about early and very great civilizations. Unfortunately, around about 200 years after the start of Christianity, knowledge of much of this has been lost because of the manner in which the Christians altered history to suit themselves, and because, with the rise in power of Christianity, Egyptian temples were closed down, and no longer were there educated priests who could understand the hieroglyphs. And so, for several hundred years, history remained in darkness. Later research indicates that many thousands of years ago, a great race suddenly appeared in the land of the two rivers. These people, now known to us as the Sumerians, have left little of their recorded history. Actually, according to the Akashic Record, the gardeners of the earth decided that the stock on earth was becoming weakened by inbreeding, and so they placed upon the earth others who also had to learn. These others are known to us as the Sumerians, and a particular branch of the Sumerians, almost like a family, became the Semites. And they, in turn, became the earliest form of Hebrews. But that was about 2000 BC. The kingdom of Sumeria was a truly mighty kingdom, and brought to this earth many advancements in culture and science, and many different plants. Certain branches of the Sumerian culture left the founding city and moved to Mesopotamia in around about the year 4000 BC. In addition, they bred and gradually populated areas of high culture. It is interesting to know that when Abraham moved with his herds from the city of Ur in Mesopotamia and went to Palestine, he and those with him brought legends which had been family history for thousands of years. They brought with them stories of the Garden of Eden, a land which lay between the Tigris and the Euphrates. This had been the common ground of many, many tribes and people who had been expanding as their populations increased over what is known as the Middle East. Eden, by the way, actually means a plain. The book of Genesis was merely a digest of stories which had been told by the people of Mesopotamia for several thousand years. Eventually, civilizations became absorbed. So it was that the Sumerian civilization, having leavened the stock of earth, became absorbed and lost within the great mass of earth people. And so, in different parts of the world and in different times, other leavening cultures had to be set down, such as the Etruscans, the Minoans, the Mayans, and the Easter Island people. According to the old legends, the 12 tribes of Israel do not altogether refer to the people of earth, but instead mean one tribe which was the original people of the earth, and the 11 tribes or cultures which were put down here to leaven the original, which was becoming weakened by inbreeding. Consider, for your own amusement, various tribes, the black people, the yellow people, the white people, and so on. Now, which do you think is the original earth inhabitant, and which are descended from the Mayans, the Sumerians, the Etruscans, and others? It makes interesting speculation. But there is no need to speculate, because I tell you very seriously that if you will practice what I've tried to show you in all my books, you can do astral travel. And if you can do astral travel, you can know what is happening and what has happened through the Akashic Record. The Akashic Record is no television show where we're interrupted by a few words from our sponsor. Here we have the utter truth. Here we have absolute exactitude. History as it was, not as it was rewritten to suit some dictator who did not like the truth of his early life, for example. By visiting the Hall of the Akashic Record, you can find the truth about the Dead Sea Scrolls, those scrolls which were found in 1947 in certain caves by the Dead Sea in a district called Qumran. This collection of scrolls belonged to a certain order of Jews who, in many ways, resembled Christians. They had a man at the head who was known as the Teacher of the Rightful Way. He was known as the Suffering Son of God, who was born to suffer and did for humanity. According to the scrolls, he had been tortured and crucified, but would rise again. Now, you might think that this refers to the leader of Christianity, Jesus. But this teacher of the rightful way lived at least 150 years before Jesus came to the earth. The evidence is definite. The evidence is absolutely precise. The scrolls themselves were part of a library of this particular Jewish sect, and the library had been endangered by the Romans, and some of the Jewish monks had hidden certain scrolls, probably the only ones that they had time to save. There are various ways in which science can determine the age of any reputably antique object, and these scrolls have been subjected to those tests, and the tests indicate that they are about 500 years older than Christianity. There is no possibility that they were written after the advent of Christianity. It follows from this that it would pay to have a really sound investigation into the Bible and all religious papers, because the Bible has been translated and retranslated many, many times. And even to the experts, many of the things in the Bible cannot be explained. If only one could overcome religious bias, religious prejudice, and discuss things openly, one could get down to the basic facts and the history of the world could be set right. There is, I repeat, a good way, and that is to consult the Akashic Record. Now, it is possible for you to do this if you first become proficient in astral travel. But if anyone tells you that he or she will go into the astral for you and look at the Akashic Record, provided you pay him or her a certain sum of money, consider him to be a fake, because these things are not done for money. I hope I've said enough in this chapter to indicate that UFOs are real, and they are not a menace to anyone on this earth. The UFOs are merely the gardeners of the earth who come here from time to time to see what is happening to their stock, and they have been here so much more frequently and in much greater numbers recently because mankind has been playing around with atomic bombs and risking blowing up the whole dump. What a terrible commotion there has been about UFOs, hasn't there? Yet UFOs are mentioned very extensively in the Greek legends and in the religious books of many different forms of religious belief. In the Bible, UFOs are mentioned, and there are many reports in ancient monasteries, such as when the monks were sat down to lunch at midday, having their first meal of meat for many weeks, a strange aerial object came over and panicked the good brothers. UFOs have been showing increasing activity during the past 50 or 60 years because the people of Earth have been showing increased hostility towards each other. Think of the First Great War. Think of the Second Great War, in which pilots of all nations saw what they called foo fighters, which were indisputably UFOs, watching the progress of battles. Then take the matter of airline pilots. It doesn't matter which airline, it doesn't matter which country, because airline pilots all over the world have seen many strange and even possibly frightening UFOs. They have talked about it extensively, too. But in many Western countries, there is a heavy censorship about such things. Fortunate it is, too, or the press, with their usual distortion, would twist everything up and make the harmless into something horrendous. It has usually been said, oh well, if there are UFOs, why have not astronomers seen them? The answer is that astronomers have seen them and have photographed them. But again, there is such a censorship about these things they have seen. They are afraid to talk for fear of getting into trouble with the authorities, who do not want the truth known. They are afraid to talk because they fear that their professional integrity will seem to be in doubt. For people who have not seen UFOs are extremely virulent in their hatred for those who have. So the pilots who fly the airlines, whether it be in a commercial capacity or in connection with the armed forces, have seen and will continue to see UFOs. But until the moronic governments of the world enlarge their attitudes, not much will be heard of those sightings. The Argentine government is surely one of the most enlightened in that they officially recognize the existence of UFOs. They were, in fact, the first country in the world to recognize UFOs as actualities. Other countries are afraid to permit any accurate information for various reasons. In the first case, the Christian belief system seems to be that man is made in the image of God, and as nothing is greater than God, nothing can be greater than man, who is made in the image of God. And so if there is some sort of creature who can make a spaceship which can go through space, visiting different worlds, then that must be hushed up, because the creature may not be in the shape of man. It's all distorted reasoning, but things will change in the not-too-distant future. Then, the military clique cannot acknowledge the existence of UFOs, because to do so would be to admit there is something more powerful than the military clique. The Russian dictators, for example, could not admit the existence of these UFOs because to do so would lessen their own stature in the eyes of their people. Now all the good little communists, if there are any good communists, think that the leaders in Moscow are omnipotent, infallible, and the most wondrous things that ever appeared on earth. So if a little green man, 3 or 4 feet high, should be able to travel from world to world, and not all the resources of the great Moscow leaders could shoot down the little green man, then it would show that the little green man is more important than the communist powers, and that would never do for the communists. So, everything about UFOs is banned. People also say that if there were UFOs, the astronauts or cosmonauts or whatever they call themselves would have seen them. But that's not at all accurate, you know. Consider this. These fellows who have been up in space have just been up a bit higher than any other humans on Earth. They have not really been in space, they've just been in a rarefied atmosphere. They are not in space until they go behind the Van Allen belts of radiation. And they are not truly in space until they have gone to the moon and come back. Further, saying that there are no UFOs, because if there had been, the spacemen would have seen them, is much the same as saying, as you gaze out on the ocean, that there are no fish in the ocean. If there were, you'd see them. You get chilly-looking fellows who sit by the side of the sea for hours trying to catch a fish. It's a full-time job with them, trying to catch fish. And yet, there are millions of fish in the sea. They are hard to see, though, aren't they, if you just take a glimpse at the ocean? In the same way, if you are shot up into a rarefied atmosphere, 100 or so miles above the surface of the earth, and you look out of a little hole in your tin can, well, you don't see a whole procession of UFOs. For one thing, you're too uncomfortable, and secondly, you don't have much of a view there. But wait a minute, though. If you have listened in to the astronauts transmitting back to Earth, you will have heard or remembered that there have been references to these UFOs seen by astronauts. But in all future replays, that reference has been carefully censored and deleted. The astronaut, in the enthusiasm of the moment, has mentioned UFOs and has also mentioned photographing UFOs, and yet in all later reports, such references have been denied. It seems, then, that we're up against quite a bad plot, a plot to conceal knowledge of what circles the Earth, a plot to conceal the very real existence of UFOs. In the press and in various pseudoscientific journals, there have been references to UFOs in the most scary terms. How wicked these things are, how dangerous, how they do this or that, and how they have got a tremendous plot to take over the Earth. Don't believe a word of it. If the UFO people had wanted to take over the Earth, they could have done it centuries ago. The whole point is they are afraid that they will have to take over the Earth, and they don't want to if the Earth goes on releasing too much hard atomic radiation. These spacemen are the gardeners of the Earth. They are trying to save the Earth from the Earth people, and what a time they're having. There are reports of many different types of UFOs. Well, of course there are. There are many different types of aircraft upon the Earth. You can, for example, have a glider without any engine. And you can have a monoplane or a biplane. You can have a one-seater aircraft or a 200-plus-seater aircraft. And if you don't want noisy aircraft, then, presumably, you could get a spherical gas balloon or one of those very interesting things made by Goodyear. So if you had a procession of these contraptions flying over darkest Africa, the people there would be most amazed at the variety and would no doubt think that they came from different cultures. In the same way, because some spacecraft are round, or ellipse-shaped, or cigar-shaped, or dumbbell-shaped, the uninformed person thinks they must come from different planets. Possibly some of them do, but it doesn't matter in the slightest, because they're not belligerent, they're not hostile, they're manned by quite benevolent people. Most of these UFOs are of the same polarity as the people of the Earth, and so they can, if they wish, alight on the surface of the Earth or dive beneath the surface of the sea. But another type of UFO comes from the negative side and cannot come close to the Earth. Perhaps I should say cannot come close to the Earth's surface without disintegrating in a violent explosion with a tremendous clap of thunder, because these particular UFOs come from the world of antimatter. That is, the opposite type of world from this. Everything, you know, has its equal and opposite. You can say that there is a sex thing in planets. One is male and the other is female. One is positive and the other is negative. One is matter and the other is antimatter. So when you get reports of a tremendous explosion or see a vast fireball plunging to Earth and excavating a huge crater, you may guess that a UFO from an antimatter world has come here and crashed. there have been reports of so-called hostile acts by UFOs. People, we are told, have been kidnapped. But do we have any proof whatever that anything or anyone has really been harmed? After all, if you have a zoo and you want to examine a specimen, you pick up a specimen and bear it away. You examine it. You might test its blood. You may test its breath content. You could x-ray it and weigh it and measure it. No doubt, all those things would appear to be very frightening and very tormenting to the ignorant animal involved. But the animal, when carefully replaced, is none the worse for this weighing and measuring, none the worse at all. In the same way, a gardener can examine a plant. He doesn't hurt the plant. He's not there to hurt plants. He's there to make them grow and make them better. So he examines the plant to see what can be done to improve it. In the same way, the gardeners of the earth occasionally pick up a specimen, a man or a woman. Well, all right, so they measure a human, they examine him or her, do a few tests, and then put the human back into human surroundings. And he or she is none the worse off for it. It's only because they are scared silly that they think that they are the worse off. Usually they're so frightened that they concoct the most horrible tales about what happened to them, when actually nothing unusual whatever happened. This world is being watched, and it has been watched since long, long before the dinosaurs thundered across the face of this earth. The world is being watched, and it will be watched for quite a time, and eventually the people of space will come down here, not as tormentors, not as slave owners, but as benevolent teachers or guides. Various countries now send what they call a Peace Corps to what are alleged to be underdeveloped countries. These Peace Corps people, who usually are in need of some form of excitement, or they can't get some other type of job, go out into jungles and teach backward people the things which they really do not need to know. Things which give them false ideas and false values. They get shown a film of perhaps some film star's marvelous palace in Hollywood, and then they all get the idea that if they become Christians or Peace Corps patrons, they also will have such a marvelous edifice in which to live, complete with swimming pool and naked dancing girls. When the people from space come here, they will not behave like that. They will show people, by example, how they should go on. Show them that wars are not necessary. Show them a true religion which can be expressed in the words, "Do as you would be done by." Before much longer, governments of the world will have to tell the truth about UFOs. They will have to tell about peoples from outer space. They know already, but they really are scared to let the public know. But the sooner they do let the public know, the sooner it will be possible to adjust, to prepare, and to avoid any untoward incidents when our gardeners return to this world. People write to me about the so-called men in black. Well, that is newspaper or journalistic license. It just means that there are outer space people here upon the earth observing, recording, and planning. They are not here to cause trouble for anyone. They are here so that they may gain information with which they can best plan how to help the people of the Earth. Unfortunately, too many Earth people react like mad animals, and if they think they're being attacked, they go berserk. If one of these men in black, who may be dressed in any color, is attacked, then obviously he has to defend himself. But unfortunately, his defense is often distorted to appear to be an original attack, when it's nothing of the sort. There are many types of UFOs. There are many shapes and sizes of people within those UFOs, but these people share one thing in common. They have lived a long time, longer than the people of Earth, and they have learned much. They have learned that warfare is childishness. They have learned that it is far better for people to get on together without all the quarreling. They have learned that Earth has apparently gone mad, and they want to do something to bring the people of Earth back to sanity and to stop excessive atomic radiation. And if they cannot stop that peacefully, then Earth will have to be in quarantine for centuries to come. And that would hold up the spiritual development of great masses of people here. So, in conclusion, do not fear UFOs, for there is nothing to fear. Instead, open your mind to the knowledge that, before too long, the people of this earth will have visitors from space who will not be belligerent, but who will try to help us as we should help others. End of chapter 4.